Overnight America, John Grayson here with you, and we're going to turn our eyes once again to the skies and take a little look at not only what's going on in the sky, but also what was going on in the sky many, many, many years ago, because some research has just been done that has offered a clearer picture of what life was like on young Earth. And we have with us Yvonne Pendleton, the director of the NASA Lunar Science Institute. Yvonne, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
I want to do a little bit of background, first of all. Tell us a little bit about the NASA Lunar Science Institute. What do you do there?
Great. It's my pleasure to tell you about the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This is a virtual institute. That means we don't have a very big building where a lot of scientists are, but rather we use technology to connect to teams across the United States and with our international partners.
So we mentioned that at the top that there has been some new work done on what things looked like when Earth was young about 3 billion years ago, and it looks like it wasn't a terribly pleasant place to be. Tell us what you found.
Right. Well, the team that we have that located in Colorado at the Southwest Research Institute, led by Dr. Bill Botke, has found that through their computer modeling and work with scientists that study physical evidence that was the remainders of what happened a long time ago on the Earth, they're finding out that the impact that led to the extinction of the dinosaurs, that size impact probably happened with far more frequency than we thought before.
Now, that particular impact, I know there's plenty of evidence and there's a lot of debate about where it may have happened. The Yucatan Peninsula is a likely suspect for that, but there's still a lot of argument about that. How do we know, first of all, that that impact occurred at all?
Well, I think the Chicxulub crater is just wonderful evidence that, I mean, we know some impact happened. Whether or not that was the one responsible might be what you're referring to as far as some sort of debate, but I don't think there's any debate at all that there was a very large impact at that time, about 65 million years ago. And we know the time of it. It's a very beautiful way that we know the timing of it because of the deposits in a very thin layer that are left virtually around the world in the sediment that gives us a record of what happened and when it happened, so that we know there was a big impact, there was this fallout, and you can see by the isotopic anomalies and material left behind that it was a global event.
You're right, and there are these little bits of evidence, like you said, they're called spherules. What are they, and what are they made of?
Right. Well, the spherules are these drops of material that were at one point very hot. They were molten. And so the idea is that when the impact hit, material was sent up into the atmosphere, and then it hardened as it came back down. And when you can preserve these in the bottom of ocean floors or in mud layers far beneath the waves of the ocean, that might be the best place to try and find a physical record of what was happening on the Earth at some point in the distant past. So what the researchers have done is combine the fact that they have found more spherules than they ever had seen before with the computer models that Bill Botke and his team have run to explain how it might have happened, and it's very consistent that the early Earth was bombarded by a lot of these very large impactors, many more than we thought in the past.
And is there a particular time frame over time? I mean, we mentioned the figure of about 3 billion years, but it actually goes quite farther on either side of that figure. So what sort of time frame are we talking about when these bombardments were happening?
Yes, we're talking about what happened about 1.8 to 3.8 billion years ago. So the Earth is thought to be roughly 4.5 billion years old. So this is 1.8 to 3.8 billion years ago. And, you know, until recently, we were really thinking that the dinosaur extinction event of 65 million years ago was rather, you know, one of the only one that happened at that time period.
Right, and again, we're talking with Yvonne Pendleton, the director of the NASA Lunar Science Institute. So when we take a look back at this era between 1.8 and 3.8 billion years ago, to say that there were impacts is a fascinating discovery in and of itself, but to talk about further what was going on in space, that caused these impacts to occur? Where were these things that were slamming into the Earth coming from?
Yes, very good question. It turns out, and again from the Botke group and researchers, that the inner part of the asteroid belt, which was very heavily populated in the early days of the solar system, it is the objects from that inner portion of the asteroid belt that we believe were bombarding the early Earth so frequently and with these very large objects.
And was there a time, I guess, when we hit that 1.8 billion years ago time frame that things began to calm down? If we were being bombarded for 2 billion years with these things coming from the inner asteroid belt, what made them stop?
Yes, well, what was happening is the early solar system at one point was a very messy place with a lot of objects on chaotic orbits coming in and hitting the early Earth. But then the giant planets, particularly Jupiter, acted like a vacuum cleaner, and they cleaned up the inner solar system quite well, so that today, even though we do have events frequently all over the world every few days, something hits the upper atmosphere, but we do not have the big objects hitting the Earth with that kind of frequency, obviously.
Now, I'm sure everybody remembers, it was not all that long ago, I guess within the last decade or so, that those dramatic photographs from the comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 that hit into Jupiter, that sort of string of pearls effect as it was disintegrating and slamming into Jupiter, would lead one to believe that maybe that sort of vacuum cleaner effect isn't completely over. Is there still a lot of big stuff out there we should be worried about?
Well, I don't think it's something we need to be worried about, but there certainly are still big objects out there. And so we are very interested from the scientific perspective of characterizing their orbits and understanding the composition of the objects that are out there. And it is true that eventually the Earth will be hit again. It's just a matter of time. But it could happen, and it could happen tomorrow as easily as it could happen 10,000 years from now. But the main point is there are many fewer objects today than there were in those early days that could have impacted the early Earth and that would impact the Earth today.
Yvonne Pendleton is with us, the director of the NASA Lunar Science Institute. And since lunar is in your name, let's talk a little bit about the moon, because if Earth was being knocked around by these huge objects that were coming from the asteroid belt, was the moon also a recipient?
Yes, thanks for asking that. The fascinating part about this study is that in the same time period that we are looking at the early Earth now, we can also look at what happened to the moon. And it looks like at least four similarly sized objects hit the moon during that time period. Now, the wonderful thing about the moon is that it preserves that record. And unlike the Earth, with the atmosphere and the oceans and various erosion processes, we have a record in place on the moon from which to study. So the moon is a wonderful neighbor to have.
That's wonderful. Can we tell, by doing the research, by digging around in the rocks here and looking at what happened on the moon, these things that hit us, do we know what they were made of?
Yes. In fact, just 2 days ago or a few days ago, we had a big meteor come through the atmosphere in Northern California, and we're picking up pieces of it now, the fragments of what looked to be a very rare type of meteorite called carbonaceous chondrite. And so, yes, once we can pick up these fragments, then we can study them with a number of techniques and understand what the carbon components are like and what kind of water processing and dynamical experiences the parent body must have had.
Now, I know that there's a big event coming up a little bit later this year. In fact, over the summer at the Ames Research Center, which you call home, and we'll get to that in just a second. But if people are listening to us talk about this and want to know more about the research that was done on these impacts 1.8 to 3.8 billion years ago, is there a place where we can send them where they can learn a little bit more about the research and how it was done?
Yes, there is. We would love for them to go to lunarscience.nasa.gov.
Lunarscience.nasa.gov. That's a very easy address to remember.
Easy to remember. And we try to keep that website updated with exciting events every single day. So I do hope that they'll come and learn about the moon and the research that the Lunar Science Institute is doing, and also what kind of educational opportunities there are and outreach events for the general public. We have a very big program called Citizen Science, and it's a way that everyone can get involved with our neighbor, the moon.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And we're going to put a link up on our Facebook page, on the Overnight America Facebook page, to lunarscience.nasa.gov. So you can check it out there as well. And we mentioned July. I know that there's an event coming up that people who happen to be in Northern California can stop by and get involved in. Tell us what's going on.
Yes. Well, every year, this will be our fifth one, the NASA Lunar Science Institute hosts a community forum called the Lunar Science Forum. And this is primarily for scientists, but the public is also welcome to stop by and listen in, especially amateur astronomers. We do ask that people register for the conference. It's July 17th, 18th, and 19th here at NASA Ames Research Center. There is no cost for it, but we do need to have them register so that we know who is coming and how many to prepare for. But last summer, we had about 600 people here. And it was just a wonderful 3 days of learning about the latest results from missions, NASA missions, and other international missions that are looking at the moon right now.
Actually, can people register on the website?
Yes, they can. So go to lunarscience.nasa.gov, and there will be a very clear button for the Lunar Science Forum for 2012.
Perfect. All right. Well, we're going to send people there. And again, the research, fascinating stuff. And Yvonne Pendleton, director of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thank you so much for spending some time and telling us about it tonight.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You got it. We appreciate the visit. There's more on the way as Overnight America continues.